The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. If you are just tuning in, we're taking a look at loss. You know, I know so many people whose loved ones have recently been called home. And you know, sometimes when somebody dies, like in the case of Father David Simonetti, friend of mine, a Catholic priest, his dad died 3 weeks ago. 3 weeks later, God called his mother home. And you see sometimes loved ones going home a short time afterwards, you know, 6 months or less. In fact, my father-in-law and my mother-in-law, my mother-in-law died within 70 days, you know, of that, maybe even a little bit less. So God has a plan. Marriage is sacramental. But sometimes the Lord also asks us to endure, to carry our cross, to be a witness. And, you know, sometimes, you know, the loss of someone like that can be a tremendous, not only pain and an agony, but it can also be a tremendous source of grace for you and for your loved ones as well. And don't waste it. There's a great patron out there. I was reading about her a little bit earlier today. If you're looking to a saint to get you through this, her name is Saint Aurea of Cordoba, Spain. And she has a fascinating story. If I have time, we'll share it with you. But I want to get back to Carlotta, Sister Carlotta Stricker, who joins us today. She lost her husband and has now committed her life to the widows of prayer. And it's good to have her back with us. Sister, let's jump into the phones. We'll take a few more calls for you if you want to join us. 888-914-9149. We'll go to Eileen in Florida first. Eileen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Yes, I'm so thrilled to be on your radio program. My husband passed away in November of a long-time illness, and I was his sole caretaker. And it was my Catholic rediscovery of my Catholic faith, your show in particular. I was listening to Relevant Radio. Also, I joined a Bible study, and I learned about redemptive suffering, making sense out of suffering. And that's how it got, helped. I would pray, and it made things clear to me. And I, since his passing, I went to Mass every day. It got me through the week after his passing and just volunteered in as many things that I could have in my church. And I had to laugh, not laugh, but when she said about didn't consider herself a widow, I just thought about that the other day when I did my income tax. You know, I filed as joint married, yep, and I'm not anymore. So what she said, and I do pray, you know, during my daytime morning, I'm doing an awful lot of praying. People I come in contact with, I pray for them. I'm not working. I'm 74. So that's my life right now, volunteering at the church and praying for people. And I'm very attracted to what she had to say, and I'm going to check on her website.
I'm grateful for your call. Sorry for your loss. I truly am. But Sister Carlotta, could you maybe, I mean, for those who are enduring this or looking for a way to maybe make their suffering a little bit more meritorious and beneficial, what's the best way to get connected or plugged in?
Actually, just what she was saying, you know, she's been busy in prayer and attending daily Mass, or at least several times a week, helping out at church. Those things are so important because it really begins to fill up our lives and giving us true meaning without having to just sit at home and be in sorrow. Yep. So when I found the Widows of Prayer, I knew that this is what I needed to do. And just being with our group of widows, we come together in gatherings for prayer, for retreats, for some social events. But just knowing that we have that connection and understanding that we all went through the loss of our spouse, we can comfort one another.
The website, if anyone wants information, it's widowsofprayer.org, widowsofprayer.org. It's a great resource. You may not have known about it. Can help you in this difficult time, and there's so much good that can come from your suffering. Thank you for your call, Eileen. Let me go to Bob. He's listening in Minnesota, listening to us in Minneapolis, in fact. Bob, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My wife passed away 4.5 years after she went on full oxygen. And she had COPD plus she had osteoporosis. Anyhow, my prayer was, and I listened to Divine Mercy Chaplet every day, but anyhow, my prayer was, how is she going to, I could not see how she could take her last breath and not be able to breathe, you know. So I got up at 4:35 or whatever it was in the morning, and I started the Divine Mercy Chaplet. She was in hospice for a week. And as soon as I started the Divine Mercy Chaplet that morning, her breathing returned to normal after 20-plus years. She battled that, wow, especially the last 4.5.
Wow.
And so I was flabbergasted. I got my daughter out of bed and said, your mother is passing us. And when we finished the last two decades,
wow,
and prior to that, my daughter sang her favorite song, You're My Sunshine. And she was gone when we finished the decades.
Oh, how beautiful.
And what a peaceful death. What a blessing. And I am overjoyed with the fact that she passed so peacefully into her next life.
Bob, thank you for sharing that, because it means a lot to me. I personally have prayed the chaplet at the bedside of my own father as he died. I'd pray the rosary, then the rosary and chaplet. And the reason I prayed that chaplet, because for those who are not familiar, the Lord told St. Faustina, one of the great promises of this beautiful prayer is for the sick and for the dying. The Lord told St. Faustina, he said to her, he said, pray as much as you can for the dying, because by your prayers, that insistent prayer, those entreaties, you will obtain for them trust in my mercy, because they have it, you know, they need it the most. And quite often they have it at least. Be assured the grace of eternal salvation for certain souls in their final moments depends on your prayers. And he promised that those who this prayer would be prayed for, that the Lord would come not as a just judge, but as a merciful Savior, that Jesus himself would stand between the Father and the dying person. And the final promise to this, and Faustina would bilocate, she'd be at the bedside of many dying people, and quite often she would have visions. She'd see the demons trying to rob these souls in their final moment. And quite often, people would be writhing in agony or torment in that final moment. She'd pray the chaplet. And the Lord said to her, this diary entry, I think 687, whoever recites the chaplet at the hour of death will receive great mercy. And Faustina, she would pray this, would see those souls, just like your wife, Bob, grow very peaceful and then go home. It's a gift for the dying. It's a gift for the sick. It's a gift for us. The Lord will defend as his own glory every soul whom the chaplet has prayed for, or when others say it for a dying person. That pardons the same. That's what he said. So, you know, if you have somebody right now you know that is in need of prayer, please pray the chaplet of divine mercy. Joan is listening to us in St. Louis, Missouri. Joan, good afternoon. You're on with Sister Carlotta Stricker.
Good afternoon.
Hey.
My name is Joan, and I lost my husband about 5 months ago after 43 fantastic years of wed. And the last year was the most challenging, but I will say it was probably the absolute best of all the years we had together. But I'm calling because I have read some really excellent, I've got some recommendations from a very good holy priest about some spiritual reading that's helped me tremendously. One of them is C.S. Lewis's book called The Grief Observed. And maybe many of you know him, of course, and that his wife died of cancer. And it's an anecdote about his grief after she died. And then along with that, I've also read A Severe Mercy by Sheldon Vonnegut, who exchanged letters with C.S. Lewis. Mm. And he as well lost his wife to cancer. So it's a beautiful love story about their journey together to God. And then there's a sequel to it called Under the Mercy, which I am now reading. And it's so helpful. And maybe just for me right now with where I am at, my husband only being gone 5 months, I've been able to really dive into this book, and it's made our love come alive again, even though he's no longer with me. And I just highly recommend it. I'm just grateful to the priest that recommended it to me.
Well, thank you for sharing that. My heart goes to you. I'm so sorry for your loss. 5 months is like yesterday, I am sure. Carlotta, you heard Joan's recommendation. Anything you want to add to that, or anything you want to recommend in terms of something that will help people in terms of reading?
Well, she has a good start. Finding those spiritual books really begin to talk to you, to your heart, to your soul, and can help you move on and to grow. And perhaps God is calling you to do something more in your life. You just need to listen and be open. And by, you know, meditating on prayers and reading those spiritual books will help you find the pathway that he is calling you for.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing that was told to us, widowhood is a vocation that God has chosen for us now.
Yeah.
So never really thought about that, but this is our new vocation.
Yeah, sister, I love that, because in the end, being a widow, it shouldn't mean that you're lonely. Somebody once said to me, when you lose a spouse, it's another season of life. It contains good days and bad days and ordinary days. But the life of a widow, it's not better or worse than the life of a married person, a married woman. It's just different. It's just different for you at that particular time. It requires some getting used to this time of transition, but it'll be different nonetheless. I'm so grateful for your witness here today and for all the time that you spent with us. And can't tell you how grateful I am for your prayers, especially with the widows of prayer. I only have a moment or two left. I'd like to give you some final thoughts if I could. And just whatever you'd like to leave those who are listening with now.
I think at this point, it's good to take the time to really search your soul and your mind. And there's so much living to do, even after we've lost our spouses. There are some people that have said, when the widows of prayer have gathered together, how is it that you're always smiling? Mm. Well, you know, when you're doing God's work, it's easy to smile. We still miss our spouses, even after 12 years, a song might come on the radio and it might be just something that would trigger, you know, some tears. But that's not a bad thing. That means I'm still thinking of him and caring.
Yeah.
So, but we have to go on living. That's
Amen.
What God's plan is for us.
Yeah, well, sister, pray for us, okay? And again, thank you so much for your beautiful testimony and your incredible witness. I want everybody to please check out widowsofprayer.org. That's the website. Let's take a quick call in here. I know I have a couple minutes before I've got to change gears here. Stephanie is listening in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Stephanie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. Thank you so much for all you do. I just wanted, I know you don't have much time, quickly share with you that I have been away from the church, my husband and I, for 40 years.
Wow.
And, yeah. And he had been diagnosed with cancer. And the end was he did die 5 years ago. But the Easter Sunday before he died, we had to take him to the hospital. Things were getting worse. Came home with hospice. Friends of ours from my Catholic church that I went back to church since he passed, gave me Divine Mercy to pray. So I did that, and he passed away on Divine Mercy Sunday at 7 a.m.
Wow.
And I immediately, I took that as a sign, like God, you know,
oh my gosh,
forgave him, forgave me. And
are you kidding me?
God, I know.
Are you kidding
me?
I don't mean to step on you, Stephanie, but that's such a gift. You know, if I had to die on any day in the entire year, that would be the day I'd want to go. And you should really rejoice because, you know, I'm sure if your husband received the sacraments, if he had the confession and the Eucharist, this Divine Mercy Sunday, and this goes for everyone. I'll talk more about it a little bit later in a week. I'll unpack it all for everybody. But the Lord made a great promise. It's known as the Extraordinary Promise of Divine Mercy. And on that day, he promised that the floodgates of his mercy will be open. He says, the floodgates in which all graces flow on that day are open. And you speak to experts, it's like all the sin and all the temporal punishment due for your sin, if he worthily received the Eucharist, had gone to confession, and really trusted in Jesus and had firm amendment of his life, that's a straight shot right to heaven.
Yeah.
So what a joy. I tell the Lord all the time, that's the day I want you to take me. Take me home on Divine Mercy.
Take me on that day. And he loved God, but he didn't like the organization of the church and being felt controlled, and but he would say his rosary at night. He was always praying. But after that, I promised God I would go back to church, and I did. And when I, the first week I went back, I opened the newsletter, and there was a Divine Mercy Cynical group, which I joined. And I've been with them for 5 years now. And it's just been an amazing, I feel like God just took me, how it's helped my grief, I can't even explain. But he put like this shield around me and took me back and, you know, welcome home. And
what a beautiful witness.
Yeah, I hope my husband's in a good place. I think he is.
I think he is.
Everything. And one last thing. So I picked out prayer cards at the funeral home, and they were, you know, the blue cards where Jesus is embracing someone coming to heaven. So those were the cards I had picked out at the funeral home. And then when I went to my first Divine Mercy class, there was a picture on the wall, and it was the same picture. So then I knew this is where I was supposed to be.
I love it.
This is where God wanted me. I mean, even the same picture was in the room as the, like, what's the chances of that? It was like an affirming, you're okay, he's okay.
Don't you love Divine Mercy? I mean, I trusted it. I mean, souls can be away from the faith. The Lord told St. Faustina, he says, the greater the sinner, the greater the right they had to his mercy. In fact, they have priority to it over others. So all we have to do is just set a jar at the door of our heart ever so little, he told St. Faustina, and God's grace will do the rest. So what a blessing for you to know that your husband had those gifts. I'm sorry for your loss, but I'm so delighted that both of you came back to the church. You're a beautiful witness and a wonderful soul, and I'm so glad you called in today.
Thank you so much, and thank you for all you do. I don't know, after my husband passed, my friend at church said, listen to Relevant Radio, and I haven't stopped because you guys have kept me company, you know, all day long, and I have it on, and maybe I'll go out for a while, come home, and it's like, Alexa, put Relevant Radio on, you know, and
I
when
love
I'm
it.
Cooking, yeah.
Well, thank you.
She's answering me, yeah.
You turned on a lot of Alexas around the country. Somebody's radios
I know. I said the name, and she asked me a question. I'm going to turn you back on in a few minutes,
I love it. Stephanie, thank you.
Thank you,
leave it right there. Great to talk to you. Remember me in your prayers, okay? I had a value
that. Absolutely. I will. God bless.
God bless you. I love that story. God's grace is so deep. It's so abundant. This Sunday is Divine Mercy Sunday, and let me just invite you to join me too. Father Rocky and I, we're going to be praying the Divine Mercy Chaplet on Sunday. In fact, we have a special Divine Mercy celebration we'll have that afternoon. It starts at 3 Central. Father will lead it, and we invite you to join us. You can listen on your Alexa. You can listen on your smart speaker or the mobile app or the computer or the station you're now listening to me on. But join us on this day, the day in which the Lord, you know, he requested Divine Mercy Sunday. He spoke to Faustina more about that than he did anything else. One of the very first things he mentioned, spoke about it 14 different times to her. It's a feast he wanted proclaimed and declared. And, of course, John Paul II declared it when he canonized Faustina on April 30th in the year 2000. It's a day of extraordinary grace. I'll share with you an incredible miracle that took place to me on that day, a prayer that was unbelievably answered. We'll get into that a little bit later in the week as well. But I do have to change gears. We've got a lot to still get into in the show today. And I just I'm thankful for this opportunity to share with the faith with you and talk about what it means to lose somebody. We will one day be reunited with them again. Today is an interesting date. It's 4/20 on the calendar, right? And I don't know if you know the connection it has with marijuana. The weed aficionados, if you will, hold the 20th of April at 4:20 p.m. is kind of a special time. And according to Time Magazine, I was reading about it a little bit earlier, it can be traced all the way back to 1971 when a group of five students at a high school in Marin County, California, began meeting at 4:20 to get high. They'd smoke their weed. And 4:20 doesn't really have any significance number-wise, but it's a day that has taken special precedent now. When we come back, we'll give you a little history behind it, and you'll hear from Dr. Kathleen Birchelman. You know, we spoke to her a short time ago about the Congress decriminalizing marijuana. Will the Senate do it? Will it be, legal at the federal level? We'll see what happens. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the morality of it and so much more. Stay with me.
We go there. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Thank you so much for having me, Drew.
It's a delight. So your thoughts, let's start with the legalization of marijuana. I think on the federal level, if they get enough votes, of course, this will drop, and then states are going to have to deal with it. I was surprised at how attitudes have changed in 20 years from 34% to 68% saying 7 out of 10 Americans, it should be legalized. Have attitudes changed? I'm assuming a lot more people are probably using it. And let's talk first, though, about what you see coming nationally at the federal and legal level.
I agree with you that I think this is going to go to the states, and then every state's going to have to make a different decision. But you know, the real problem here is that marijuana, the attitude has really changed. I see it in all my patients. The attitude is, well, it's better than those medications. And people are using it to treat anything and everything, from arthritis to depression and anxiety. In the beginning, you know, the argument was, well, it's really good for nausea and cancer patients, and that's true. And I'll never deny that cannabinoids, the class of drugs represented by marijuana, can be very effective drugs for treatment of certain conditions. But that's just it. It's a drug, right? And every drug has its risks and its benefits and should be appropriately regulated. And that's not what we're talking about here. It's a very different situation.
Hey, you know, there are benefits, though, to it, aren't there? I mean, it's good for glaucoma. It's good for nausea. I mean,
Absolutely.
there are applications for it. Should it then fall under the umbrella of being prescribed by your doctor? Or can people, that it's legal, smoke it and enjoy it like they would, let's say, you know, it's a Saturday night, they're with their friends, instead of having a couple beers on their deck or a glass of wine or two, they decide to smoke marijuana. You see that as being very different, right?
I do, because I think it's used heavily recreationally for just life stress, similar to having a glass of wine, as you say. But the problem is it's a different drug. And I hear that comparison all the time. How is it different than having a glass of wine? And the answer is it's a different drug that has different side effects. And for example, what about smoking and driving? There's no breathalyzer test. You know, how are we going to, we do know that smoking marijuana affects driving. How are we going to keep the road safe? Our society is not set up for the legalization of marijuana in terms of the effects it has on the rest of society. What about the effects on children, the effects of secondhand marijuana smoke? We know it affects the cry of babies if mothers smoke it, you know? We actually have a very good understanding of the effects of alcohol, and we have a good understanding of how much alcohol can be used responsibly. Jesus Christ drank, right? But he was never intoxicated, right? We're not there with marijuana. And I think there are some people that may be able to smoke marijuana, quote unquote, responsibly, but there's no definition of that. And we know with alcohol, we know that people, there's people that really can't ever have a drink because they have alcoholism, they have an addiction issue. And there's some people that can use it responsibly. But how do we define responsible use of marijuana? We don't know.
Yeah, it's funny because I've seen both ends of the spectrum, as you pointed out. You know, some who, gosh, they should never have started smoking because it has just sapped them of any ambition. And I see others who it almost moderates. And I know there are some medical benefits to it. But then the big thing for me always is the morality of whether or not one should smoke, you know, marijuana or not. I sit back and I think, would Christ have smoked a bowl with his apostles, right? Would he have rolled a joint with these guys? No, I don't think so. I mean, I don't. He, as you said, had a glass of wine. Did he get drunk? Because I do think there's a difference. And correct me if I'm wrong on this. I mean, you can have a drink, you can have a glass or two of wine, depending on how big you are, what your body weight is, et cetera, and not be intoxicated, not be drunk. But with the THC levels in some of this marijuana now, that's really the intoxicant in marijuana. you know, it's just a couple hits and you're going to be high, right? Am I correct in that? And is that where the difference when it comes to the moral factors play out?
Well, no, you're right to say that the drugs are not, all these different aspects of marijuana are not equivalent, right? So there's all different, you can smoke marijuana, but then there's like various different forms of THC, and there's edibles. And we do know that you can very quickly go have more of a dose of THC than intended, especially with some of the edibles. We've seen increasing and continuously growing rates of children that accidentally eat these edibles. I had a patient whose mother had a job working at a hotel, and she brought home what looks like an unopened bag of gummy bears and let her kids eat it. And they were all admitted to the hospital with neurologic changes because they ate the whole bag of THC gummy bears, and they were young children. And, you know, so this is an increasing problem. So the drug, you know, there's all these different forms of it, and I don't think the public really understands, right? But there's a conversation we're not having, and that's why are people using THC derivatives? And the answer is because they hurt, right? It's pain, it's anxiety, it's stress, it's depression. I think the number one reason why people tell me they're smoking is for anxiety, and they almost all say that it's better than taking an SSRI. My answer to that is, but the research hasn't borne that out. Mm-hmm. We know that SSRIs are actually very effective in treating anxiety and lead people to outcomes that are measurable, such as completing education and gaining employment.
Right.
But we don't see those same outcomes when marijuana is used for treating anxiety. So show me the data and I'll believe it, right? But I don't see the data.
Right.
And so I think we have to be honest about the science here about using marijuana as a psychiatric drug. And I think we have to be honest, as Catholic Christians, that the world's hurting. And that's why we're having this conversation. That's why we're talking about decriminalizing it.
Yeah.
Because everyone's hurting and they're looking for a path out. And as Catholic Christians, there's much better solutions to that hurt, right?
Amen. I love that. Amen. We'll talk about it. Look, do me a favor. Hang on. I'm going to take a short pause. When we come back, if you're on hold, we'll get you on the air. The good doctor will answer your questions. We'll take your comments. If you want to get in, it's 888-914-9149. Try that one more time. 888-914-9149. There is a line or two open right now, but that's about it. I'll grab as many calls as I can on the other side. If you're joining us, the marijuana looks like it's going to be potentially legalized on the federal level. At least the prohibitions on it will be dropped. And states will have to decide whether or not, what kind of policies they're going to enact. So it might be more readily available to you, to your children, to your grandchildren, taking a look at everything from the morality of it to the future. Stay with us.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
All the issues, one place. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, thanks for joining me. It's good to be here with you today, taking a look at, of course, the House wanted to decriminalize marijuana, and we'll see what happens to the future of it. As my guest today, Dr. Kathleen Birchelman, has pointed out, she thinks it's probably going to go to the state level. And we're just taking a look at the ethics, the morality, the health benefits of this. We're going to take your calls and questions right now, too. But I'll just throw one more thing out. By the way, if you want to check out Dr. Birchelman, you can get her at mycatholicdoctor.com. Great way to check her out. And as I said, she did research on marijuana at the NIH, the National Institutes of Health. So I brought her on. One of the things, Doctor, before we jump into the calls, I just want to hit one other point, because some parents might say, well, my kids are smoking pot right now, but they're young, you know, they're in high school or they're college, and that's what they do. They'll grow out of it. There have been a number of studies that have looked at the effects of marijuana in the brain. I think there was the Lancet Psychiatry published a study probably a year or two ago. I'd read it talking about those who use high potency marijuana on a daily basis, that they're actually more prone to having, you know, psychotic episodes than those who don't. And I think they defined high potency marijuana as weed having a THC level of 10% or above. And I think it's pretty common on the market today. And of course, there was studies done in Britain that looked at the brains of 14-year-old boys who said that they don't use the drug once or twice compared to the brains of kids who never used it. They found that there were some permanent changes in the brains of those who used it. I don't remember all the data there, but that to me is very striking, especially for young kids whose brains are still developing. Your thoughts on the psychiatric impact of this and on the physiology of developing brains, something parents should be concerned about?
Oh, yes. And we talked about this the last time you had me on, actually, yeah. About the impaired brain development of the rapidly maturing adolescent brain. And there's clear evidence that shows that the brain is not done maturing. And so to give that in adolescence, and there's a lot of growth, so to affect that with a drug that has an unknown consequences is a really serious matter in the adolescent. So there's so many good treatments out there for these teens. You know, why are they taking it? For their depression, for their anxiety. I will never deny that cannabinoids are effective drugs that should be used in certain circumstances. But they need to be appropriately prescribed and managed by physicians. And the physician's going to be making a judgment about, is this the right drug for this patient, or is there a better drug, or what are this patient's options, and give those options to the patient.
Yeah. All right, well, let's take a few calls for you. Paul is in Youngstown, Ohio. Paul, thanks for listening to us there. You're on the air with Dr. Kathleen Birchelman.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to ask, now, if a person has, say, a glass or two glasses of wine, and maybe they've relaxed a little bit after work or in a social situation, wouldn't that be a very mild form of intoxication? Drunkenness just being a more severe state of intoxication.
Right. You know, it's very interesting. The rule of St. Benedict actually even defines the amount of alcohol the early Benedictine monks were about allowed to use. And so this question of, you know, how much alcohol is too much alcohol is as old as the church itself. And I think that's kind of what you're alluding to.
Yes, I never did understand exactly what was considered moderate alcohol consumption. I've read different studies over the years, and some will say two drinks a day, some would say several drinks a week, but there doesn't seem to be a consensus yet on alcohol. But probably, if I had to guess, I would say mankind has probably used cannabis longer, even before they had discovered alcohol. I don't know if that's correct or not, but that would be my guess.
Well, Paul, thanks. I'm not sure. Alcohol goes back in millennia as well. But, Doctor, you studied this. I don't know if you want to address that point or not.
Just the history of its use of marijuana use. You know, I'm not an expert on the history of the use, I'm afraid to comment.
I don't know which one was used first. I don't know if anybody can prove that. But to his other point, he's saying, hey, a couple glasses of wine, you get a little euphoric. If you drink a bottle or two, you get drunk, right? And the same thing with marijuana. I think what this really comes down to is, you know, if you get high, are you in an altered state of consciousness? And if you are, when your mind is impaired, then you have a diminished sense of making good choices. You know, if a person's high, it's more difficult for them to do that. And there are some moral ramifications with that. So, you know, maybe it comes down to the type of weed you smoke, too. Maybe the homegrown weed with the very low THC levels is a lot different. The weed of the 60s and your parents' or grandparents' weed might be different than what's being smoked today. So it's such a complex issue with a lot of different layers. It's not one size fits all, is it?
Not at all. And I think part of the problem with the comparison to alcohol, as per our prior conversation, is that, you know, alcohol has been really clearly defined in its societal effects. You know, if you have a blood alcohol level over X, it's illegal to be driving, right? And we haven't been able to do that with marijuana. So this how much is too much question is really, really hard to answer.
All right. Well, let's do this. Eddie's in Fort Myers, Florida. He has a question for you. Eddie, hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thanks for taking the call, guys. Yes, in fact, I'm a... And I live in Florida. I get...
Eddie, I'm going to put you on hold because we're I'm going to come back to you. Your signal is breaking up, and we'll get you back on the air, okay? So just try to get into a little bit of a better cell signal and stay on the line. I'll have my call screener check you out. L.A., California. Mike, good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hi. Pleasure. First time caller. It's nice to talk to you.
Thanks, Mike.
So a little history. I'm a Protestant. I was 60-something-year-old father. I have three children, two teenagers and one a couple years younger. Mm-hmm. And grew up in the Venice area. And, you know, was a casual or probably a heavy pot smoker in high school. And then mm-hmm. at some point in college, I got very involved in my church and dropped it. And then I think in the 90s, this was in the 70s, and then by the 90s, when my father passed away, I got more involved. Mm-hmm. But I'm casual. But right. A couple observations. One would be that I'm not the typical pot user. That everybody else I know that uses pot smokes it all day, every day.
Yeah.
And, you know, and believe me, you can pray for me. I want to break the habit because I also tend to, and I see with other people, if you smoke pot or you drink beer first, then you want to do the other. Mm-hmm. And I do that. I'll smoke pot and then I want to have a few drinks and just to relax and from the stress and everything. And so it's like a crutch. It's something that I want to get rid of. And again, and the other aspect would be I just see people all the time. You get to an intersection and you smell the pot coming out of cars and I go, and it's so much, I can tell you for sure, it's way, way, way stronger than the stuff, the Mexican pot we used to get in the 70s was nothing. This stuff is
sure.
So anyway, so I would just say that I'm really against it. And if they completely outlawed it, I'd be 100% in favor of that.
Huh.
And again, I'd say pray for me to figure out a way to stop doing this. And it kind of really started getting heavy during COVID because of boredom and things. Anyway, so I really appreciate
what
you guys are doing.
And, I appreciate the contribution. Blessings. Thank you. It's good to hear from you, and it's good to hear the discernment process, doctor, that he's going through on it. Casual user, not Catholic, against legalization, which is quite telling. It's going to be a decision for a lot of Americans, too, when they go into the voting booth. As these more and more states come on board, you're going to have to decide which way you pull the lever on this issue for a lot of people. And let's talk about that, too. Let's talk about where the church is on that issue. But before we do, let's bring Eddie in. I think that was his comment. He's listening in Fort Myers, Florida. Eddie, good afternoon. It's good to have you back. I hope your signal's a little better.
Hey, I can see. Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, you're breaking up a little bit, but go ahead. We'll give it a shot.
Veteran. And I do have my marijuana card from Florida.
Yep.
And I've been using it for now a few years. I'm about...
You know, Eddie, I'm so sorry. Eddie, the only thing I made out is you have a marijuana card. You've been using it for years. The line that my call screener is telling me is he wants to know what the church's view on marijuana is. I guess, doctor, if you have a medical, you know, need for it, it's completely moral. How would you define the morality of using marijuana today, even if it is legalized across the states? If it's, you know, illegal, that's one thing. But let's say, you know, it becomes legal at the federal and state level. What are the moral issues of smoking marijuana?
You know, for 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has been committed to health care, and we've believed in the scientific method since the scientific revolution, right? So the morality here is that if it's an effective medication, it can be used. But if it's resulting in any harm to self or other, then it should not be used. And I think the problem here is the risk of rationalizing that something's being used for a good, for a medical treatment, when it's really being used in a form of self-harm or harm toward society, or at least putting an individual or society at risk because they're smoking and driving, or because, and I think this is probably the biggest issue, You have real crosses that you're carrying that the Lord wants you to use to bring you to holiness, yeah. And you're just trying to dull it all away with a drug.
That's such a good perspective. You're right. I mean, so many of the saints talked about the value of suffering and using it, allowing it to be meritorious, to be redemptive, to be conversionary and transformative. And so often, you're right, we dull or mute that or don't use it for our spiritual benefit. Some sweeping legislation in our country that could monumentally reshape U.S. drug policy and expunge some marijuana convictions. The House, of course, voted to decriminalize cannabis on the federal level. We'll see what happens with the Senate. I think it's an inevitability, as I shared with you just moments ago. Gallup did a poll in November. It said 68% of Americans support the legalization of marijuana. That's 7 out of 10. So I've invited to join me today Dr. Kathleen Bertelman. She has done research on marijuana at the NIH and is a very gifted physician, founder of a great organization as well, mycatholicdoctor.com, and you can check her out. We're taking a look at everything from the psychological to the physiological to the moral implications of this. And, Doctor, before I jump into the phones, very quickly, there are some people who make the case, and I've had them on the air in the past that said, marijuana is a gateway drug. A lot of other people say, hey, it's not. You know, I don't see people who smoke pot getting up and, you know, being violent, although others say that might be the case. Do you see it do you see it similar to alcohol? Do you see it as a gateway drug? I mean, how do you view this?
I think it's very dangerous to give a one-size-fits-all answer because every brain is unique, right? We're all made what's one-size-fits-all is that we are all made in the image and likeness of God. That said, every brain is different. And right. I think that for some people, marijuana can be a gateway drug. For other people, it's not. There's a lot of people like that last caller that you know, are routinely mixing alcohol plus marijuana. It's just dangerous to generalize.
All right. It's a legitimate question. I've had somebody in drug rehabilitation therapy saying the majority of the people who used stronger type of drugs, this is one of the common denominators in it. But you're right. I mean, not everybody does it. I know people who smoke weed and have never done anything beyond that. So it's a good, solid answer. Katie in Orange, California. Good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. Good afternoon. I just wanted to share with anyone who's thinking about whether this is something they should be doing in the long term when it's legalized in their state. You know, my father-in-law, he smoked weed since, you know, he was a young man in the 60s and 70s, so he smoked his entire life, and it hasn't always been, you know, high THC. It's been pretty low back in the day.
Sure.
And it seems that the effect on him as he now is nearing retirement is that it has chipped away at his resiliency. So he's never been a terribly, you know, social butterfly or outgoing creature, but as he's sort of dabbling in things that he'll want to do in retirement, like take a class in something that he's, you know, never gotten to take a class in, or join a group that he's never had the time to join. He's tried some of these things out and quit because he has like a social anxiety issue where, you know, perhaps if he wasn't medicating away his feelings, you know, you'd be in a situation that could be somewhat, you know, anxious. It can make you anxious, right? So first time meeting people, you know, or a class or those kinds of situations, we all have, you know, nervousness on the first day or whatever kind of thing. He doesn't seem to have the ability to overcome just that basic, not over the top, just a basic level of discomfort in those settings. And as a result, he's dropped things, he's quit things.
Yeah.
And it's looking like the idea of doing these things in retirement is not going to happen because he spent his life chipping away at his resiliency instead of learning how to handle emotion and deal with situations that are, you know, a little bit uncomfortable.
It's such a great call. Katie, thank you for bringing that to the conversation. And doctor, let's talk about this. Cannabis use long-term, is there a link to increased anxiety, other psychiatric type of disorders? I know the mainstream media largely downplays and ignores this. I don't know the type of research that's been done. You've done this. We've talked about psychosis. We've talked about schizophrenia. Suicides have even been linked to this as well. What about anxiety?
Well, and it's very hard to do these studies well because people with anxiety are often self-medicating with marijuana, right? And but what we can say is that the question isn't, is it okay to use marijuana for anxiety? I think the better question is it the best drug for a person with anxiety? And the answer to that is no, that there's other drugs, especially the SSRIs, that can be used very effectively. And if you don't care for SSRIs, there's a million and one other approaches. And I love this caller because what she's talking about in secular language about resiliency, that you know, he's been medicating, maybe some social anxiety, and the result is he hasn't grown in resiliency. And the, you know, the religious language to express the same story is that this man has carried a cross, and he hasn't grown in virtue through that cross. And the Lord allows all of our crosses, right, so that we can grow in virtue and holiness. I mean, that's what St. Ignatius of Loyola tells us, right? And we lose that opportunity when we just medicate it away. So not only in the secular language, you don't grow in resiliency. In religious language, we're not growing in holiness. We're not growing in virtue. And we're not trying to work out our salvation with fear and trembling.
Well said. Katie, thank you very much. She's seen it. And it's just, I think it's a cautionary tale, too. I mean, are there long-term consequences for, you know, regular use of this? And I guess more data will come to the fore in the future. Let's sneak another call in because we only have a few minutes left. We'll try to get as many as we can. Emmanuel is listening in Los Angeles. He's got a comment for you, Doc. Emmanuel, good afternoon.
Thank you. Thank you, Drew. Good afternoon, Drew. Thank you for taking my call. Well, C.S. Lewis said that God doesn't judge the raw material, but what you do with it. Mm-hmm. So obviously, if I'm going to do some cocaine, obviously it's going to drive me to do stuff, you know? Or if I'm an alcoholic, is going to want me to get behind. The decision-making is not there, right? Or the good decision-making is not there. So, but from my own personal experience from using, I kind of see it like it's becoming like gluttony, the sin. Because you kind of are not satisfied with just a little hit in the morning or something. Mm-hmm. Instead, you may want to have another hit later on. So the discipline to be able to control it isn't quite there, you know, unless one is already disciplined. That's why I wouldn't condone it. That's why I wouldn't want anybody else to do it because I just wouldn't condone it mm-hmm. because, you know, it drives me to want to go ahead and do it again. So I'm kind of anxious to do it again. And I'm with the other caller, you know, like pray for me because I really don't want to have any vices.
Amen.
I just want to be free from it all, honestly. And it doesn't lead me to do bad things.
Right.
Drew, you know, it's been morally ingrained into us that it's evil by man when they place it on the drug bust next to mm-hmm. like cocaine and guns and all of that. So like, immediately, like in years and years and decades of them doing that, then automatically we're going to see it as evil. But look, the tilma from San Diego was made of hemp. Yeah. So, you know,
all right.
I don't know.
Emmanuel, first of all, I will pray for you. I promise you that. I'm going to pray for everyone who's calling in here and anyone who struggles with this or who, I love what he said to Doctor, you know, I don't want a vice, you know, and that should be all of our prayers. We should be praying for an increase in virtue. And your theme today is one of suffering, too, embracing the suffering. So often we try to medicate because we're stressed or we're in pain or whatever it may be, but there's a value, a spiritual value to embracing our particular cross. But you heard his comments, Doctor. I'll let you respond.
No, and I want to thank you for your honesty, Emmanuel, and please know of my prayers for you, too. And I think that, you know, that this, it's what you said, you always want a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. And that's where I think we have to be honest with ourselves that yes, cannabinoids are effective medications and should be treated as a medication appropriately prescribed and monitored by a physician, which is very different than legalization, right? And because having that self-control is to not want more of an enjoyable thing is just contrary to the human condition.
Yeah. Well, Doctor, I have less than a minute to go. Brian in Pennsylvania was saying, hey, if you just want to relax, what do you think about that? If you just want one hit or two to relax, what would you say to somebody who is in that mindset and that's what they use it for?
Yeah, my question is, are you just going to have just one hit or two? Or are you going to be like Emmanuel and want a little bit more, or the prior caller and want to mix it with alcohol? Are you going to choose to drive? Are you going to choose to smoke around people who are going to inhale that secondhand smoke? I think you have to look at the whole picture.
Hey, doctor, thank you. I wish I had more time. I'm up against the clock, but I hope people will check out your wonderful organization, mycatholicdoctor.com. It's a telehealth virtual care organization that brings very faithful physicians like Dr. Berkshelman and other healthcare professionals to you on your digital platform. Up against the clock.
What we don't talk about is all the great things that are going on.
And that's why Relevant Radio is determined to bring people things which are uplifting and educational and inspiring and lead people to God.
Everything that you folks do is critically important ordinarily, but in a time like this, it becomes exponentially more important because people can take the time and listen to what other people are dealing with and pray with Father Rocky and the whole team. It's phenomenal.
Bringing Christ to the world through the media. Relevant Radio.